Baseball is a strange sport. It consists of long periods in which little seems to be happening, punctuated by high-energy outbursts of rapid-fire activity. Because of this, despite ever greater profits, Major League Baseball is bent on finding ways to shorten games and to tailor baseball to today's shorter attention spans. But for the true fan, baseball is always compelling to watch and intellectually fascinating. Its superficially slow pace is an opportunity to participate in the distinctive thinking practice that defines the game. If baseball is boring, it's boring the same way that philosophy is boring, not because there isn't a lot going on, but because the challenge baseball poses is making sense of it all. In his new book, Infinite Baseball, philosopher and baseball fan Alva Noe explores the many unexpected ways in which baseball is truly a philosophical kind of game. Alva Noe is a writer and philosopher living in Berkeley, California, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, first and foremost, you are a baseball fan. So what got you thinking about the importance of or wanting to think of it in a philosophical manner?
I guess first and foremost, I'm a baseball fan, but I'm also a philosopher, and I'm a professional philosopher. I teach philosophy at the University of California, and my life is bound up with thinking the way philosophers do about our lives and about our experience and about what the sources of the value and meaning in our experiences are. And it's always been a little bit of a question for me, why do I care so much about this sport? Why have I cared so much about it really since I was a little kid? And I felt a challenge to see if I could find ways to articulate some of the distinct sources of its meaning, not just for me, but for others who love the game the way I do.
Have you always thought about it in a philosophical manner, in the sense of in just your natural thought of thinking of the depth of the sport?
I've always found the game very difficult, very challenging. Both, I don't mean just as a player, but I mean also as a fan. There's so many subtle distinctions and conceptual distinctions that go into following the game. I can remember as a little kid having a grown-up friend of mine trying to explain the infield fly rule and all these different kinds of subtle rules that operate in the unfolding of the game. As I got older and I started keeping score, I realized that one of the things you do as a fan really is as a scorekeeper. And by the way, for the listeners who don't know this, baseball has this kind of arcane practice of scorekeeping. It's not just who's ahead. It's a practice of writing down play by play what's happening in the game as it's unfolding. And the interesting thing is that to do that, you yourself need to make very subtle judgment calls. We ask, okay, so the batter hit the ball, it went into the field, the batter got to the base. Was it a hit? Or was it merely he achieved the base as a result of a fielder's error or perhaps a fielder's choice? And these are the distinctions that you need to actively participate in and that require thought and patience and a kind of analytic skill, actually, that make the game it is and that I think make it such a thinking game. In fact, one of the things, if I can continue on this vein, when I started thinking about the game with a more of a philosopher's hat on, I realized that a curious feature of the game, and one that I don't think I've ever heard anybody else remark on, is that when we're interested in what's happening in baseball, it's not sort of the material facts on the ground that matter to us. It's judgments about who's responsible for what's going on. So when I did the example I just gave, is it a hit or did the runner achieve the base as a result of a fielder's error? Really the question there is, does the batter get credit for achieving the base or does the field get blamed for the batter's achieving the base? Who's responsible for it? Who gets credit? We think of baseball action in terms of ascribing and attributing responsibility. And so we're in a kind of domain of thinking about agency and human responsibility. And what's interesting and what's kind of remarkable is that the outcome of that thinking process determines what happened in the game. That is, it's only a hit if certain conditions were met having to do with who's responsible. Even something as basic to the game as balls and strikes, I think, finally comes down to an umpire's assessment of whether a batter should have hit the pitch or can be forgiven for not hitting the ball because it was such a bad pitch that it's the pitcher's fault that the batter couldn't hit it. So on my way of thinking, the strike zone isn't really a physical place, although we can point to it, but the strike zone is really a kind of zone of responsibility. Batters are responsible for what's in the strike zone, and it's sort of to the fault of the pitcher for throwing things outside the strike zone.
The name of the book is Infinite Baseball, and you write in the introduction, baseball is an infinite game, or to make the point differently, it isn't really a game at all, it is a world. How so?
Well, the remarkable thing about baseball, and I've been trying to kind of get at this already a little bit in the answers that I've been giving you, is that baseball isn't just a thing you do. It's not just an activity that you can get caught up in and get caught up in the flow the way you can get caught up with dribbling the ball back and forth or, you know, along a court. Baseball is also, all at once, this activity of thinking about the game as you're playing it. I don't mean to say that the baseball players themselves are sitting there philosophizing the game while they're playing it, but the game is constantly throwing up these questions about what happened that require careful thought and deliberation. And then at another level entirely, there's also so much going on in the field that has to do with communication and very subtle tactical decision makings. When a batter is at the plate, the batter's chances for getting a hit depend so much on his ability to anticipate what the pitcher is likely to throw. And there are so many different factors that govern what the pitcher is likely to throw, from, you know, what he just threw before, to what he's able to throw, to what he thinks that the batter is going to anticipate that he will throw. So there's this very subtle communication game going on. And the point is that all this thinking is sort of folded over on top of all the doing, and it's just much bigger than what's going on the field. It's really a kind of a practice of thinking about what's going on in the field that's happening itself on the field. So it's kind of folded over on itself, and that's kind of what I mean when I say it's an infinite game. Baseball, the activity, contains within it the activity of thinking about baseball. And then it extends across the foul lines into the fans. You know, I'm also a father, and I have kids who play baseball, so I've had that very distinctive experience of watching baseball where you're really involved in the way you can only be involved if you sort of are really caring and concerned for the children playing. And that's sort of part of what feeds this idea of mine, that it's really a whole world. It's not just a game.
Mm. You write in the book about how to be a fan. What do you think a good way of being a fan is?
That's a good question. The heart of being a fan, and I think what finally the whole shebang goes down to, whether we're talking about adult professional baseball played by millionaires or what's going on at the level of organized youth baseball in communities or sandlot pickup baseball, at the bottom, it all comes down to love. It comes down to caring and an interest in this kind of activity of self-discovery, which I think finally the game of baseball is. So when you go to a baseball stadium these days, you know, it's easy to make fun of grown people spending vast sums of money on memorabilia and, you know, the kinds of things that we throw our credit cards at when we're at the baseball stadium. But I think what explains that and what motivates that finally is the fact that those grown-ups are really still kids, and those kids are motivated by just a complete fascination and adoration for the people playing the game.
It seems like nostalgia, I mean, you mentioned love, but nostalgia is such a part of the game too, and how we feel about it and how we relate to it. Is nostalgia usually an ingredient in philosophy?
Despite what I just said about love and the kind of sentiments that attach to the game, I myself am quite suspicious of the role that nostalgia sometimes plays. You know, there is baseball has kind of marketed itself, professional baseball has marketed itself, you know, in the clothing of nostalgia. Even this phrase, the national pastime, I don't know if baseball ever really was the national pastime. It's hard to imagine how one sport or one game could have ever united a country as large and diverse as ours is. But the national pastime phrase is certainly a very useful marketing slogan. And I think the game has marketed itself with nostalgia and fathers and sons. I would say that's not what I celebrate in the game. And similarly, I think that often gets linked up to a certain kind of commercialized patriotism and, you know, the jet flyovers and patriotic song singing. I'm not at all hostile to patriotism, to the contrary, but it's wrapped up in a kind of commercial way in baseball that I find a little bit cheap. I think the nostalgia point goes the same way.
So let me just give you an example of what I mean, I guess, which is that time where we can remember where our parents brought us to a game and seeing that baseball diamond for the first time and how that just changes your life. Maybe that's not nostalgia. I don't know what that is, but that's what I was referring to.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. And why that is that these that's actually a really important and lovely thought that you're expressing there. What is it about those experiences that seem to leave such a strong imprint on us? Maybe it's because for most of us, you know, it was a kind of a very special thing to be taken anywhere, let alone to be taken to a baseball game and see the field of green and the bright lights and the whole thing. The game, yeah, definitely an ingredient, I think, in the kind of emotions that wash over us when we you know, climb the concrete steps of the stadium and then enter out into the stands and then all of a sudden see that bright green field and those people in their uniforms running around on it. But to go to your initial question, I guess I would not say that those kinds of feelings have a lot to do with philosophy usually. But what philosophy does have to do very often with is some fact or phenomenon of human life, whether it is love or whether it is facts about our ethical or political life, or just the fact that we're conscious, perceiving, awake human beings at all. These are the kinds of things that philosophy looks at in wonder and asks, how does that work? Or how in the world of nature do they come to be sources of consciousness like we are, or, you know, bearers of experience and so on like we are? And I have tried to do that with baseball. I've said, look, here's this thing that captures our attention and sustains our interest. And what is it? What is it that makes it so special? And I should say there, I say so special with caution. And one of the things in the book I want to resist is confusing the fact that we grow up with it with the fact that it's special. You know, we may love it because it's our game, but, you know, other games are special to other people, and every game is special in its own way. But what I do try to point out is that there is an unusual link between thoughtfulness and baseball. And I think in a lot of ways it has to do, there is something very American about it, in a way that's a kind of familiar point to make about baseball. But I understand it in a slightly different way. You know, I've been emphasizing baseball's concern with agency and responsibility and with the need to reflect on what's going on while it's going on in order to play the game. But, you know, one of the other big movements, big trends in thinking about baseball, and although it's very lively today, it is in no way a new trend. It's a trend as old as the game itself, is to try to understand the game in terms of numbers and statistics and using math and analytics to tell the story of the game and understand what's going on. So one of the things which is very interesting is in the history of the game, you get a kind of competition or rivalry between, if you like, a more mathematical way of thinking about the game and a more humanistic way of thinking about the game. And I think both of these strands are always there. And I think that competition, that rivalry, is also reflected in American culture at large, and maybe in world culture, we have all these problems we face as communities, as parents and as children and as members of society. And then there are all these experts telling us that science or math, you know, can give us solutions. And science, I'm pro science, but no matter all the scientific knowledge in the world doesn't take away from us the responsibility that we have for making hard choices, you know, about how to raise our children or about what kinds of tax policies would be best for the country to follow. And I think that there's a sense in which these ideas work out in the context of baseball in a quite remarkable way.
Philosopher and baseball fan Ava Noe explores the game in Infinite Baseball. The book is published by Oxford University Press. Ava, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Oh, it was a real honor. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, Infinite Baseball, Notes from a Philosopher at the Ballpark. It is published by Oxford. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.